What's going on, everyone? I'm Zach, your host of the Auxoro podcast, where music artists, athletes, entrepreneurs, and other interesting human beings dive deep into the story beyond the surface. This episode is brought to you by The Aux. The Aux is a short-form podcast produced by Auxoro, bringing you a daily dose of uncensored wisdom to jumpstart your life. 5-minute episodes, no bullshit, no topic off limits. We have explored things like fashion, porn, relationships, meditation, and more. You can subscribe to this podcast by searching The Aux, A-U-X, wherever you listen to podcasts or by visiting the link in the description. This time, we sat down with Connor Tumbaga, who sells sneakers to celebrity clients across the globe. He is the concierge for anyone who desires the first-class limited sneaker experience. He has sold sneakers to music artists like DaBaby, Trippy Red. He also works with many influencers on YouTube and the video game industry as well. Connor's deals are in the big boy bank ranges, but it didn't start that way. He hustled his ass off starting as a freshman in high school, waiting in lines for the most popular releases, building up an impressive contact list, and the most important part, delivering on the sale. He now has a network of people that work for him, but the hustle hasn't stopped. On this episode, Connor shares how he built a successful sales business from the ground up as a teenager in high school, how he has built a network with top clients around the world, how to navigate the hype of the limited sneaker industry, and more. Without further ado, I am excited to bring you this wide-ranging conversation with Connor Tumbaga.
Like these celebrities, I was looking at my favorite celebrities, Justin Bieber, Travis Scott. And I was like, I really want to work with these guys and I want to do something with them. So I found a cool way on Instagram to network to every single celebrity that I wanted to get in contact with. And it didn't matter if they had 100 million followers or 10,000 followers. I was able to create a tactic to get in contact with any of them and entice them by shoes.
What type of tactics were you using to get in contact? Because I'm sure so many people now that social media has such a prominent presence in people's lives and sneakers have become such a niche market recently, and it's kind of like a product of want where the demand is much greater than the supply. How did you get into the DMs and the minds of these celebrities on Instagram?
Yeah. So I went into their following and I'd look for the smallest people who they were following. So people who had less than 10,000 followers. And I DM them and I say, I'm interested in working with your friend, whoever. Let's just say Justin Bieber. I'm interested in working with Justin Bieber. Yeah. And I'm willing to hook you up with a pair of shoes if you can get me in contact with your friend. So it gave them something to work for. You know, if we can get it, then if we can get him in contact with them, then I can get a pair of these cool shoes too. You know, that's how it started. And I kept that. And then my friend, I kept going at it, doing that with every celebrity. And then I met this one guy who was a manager, because I was DMing all kinds of different people. And this one guy who happened to have less than 10,000 followers was a manager. And he managed a whole bunch of like celebrities or YouTubers and stuff like that, influencers. And he's like, well, you don't have to keep doing that. You can just go to me. I can be your guy who connects you. Just, you know, keep hooking me up with shoes and I'll get you in contact with everybody.
That's so cool. I had never thought about setting up something like that. And it seems like it's pretty effective because you're providing an incentive for your first point of contact, which is a friend or a friend of a friend of someone like Justin Bieber, to use your example. So it's not like the typical reach out on Instagram where someone who's friends with Justin Bieber. Yeah, someone who's friends with Justin Bieber that gets tagged in his photos probably gets hundreds of DMs a day saying like, yo, can I do this opportunity with Justin Bieber? Can I do this? Always asking for something in return and not really providing any value. But then you are taking the next step and saying, hey, I know you probably get this request all the time, but if you can get me in contact with Justin Bieber, here's what I can do for you in the form of sneakers. Yeah. And it kind of goes, bridges that gap between you're purely doing something for me and I'm just receiving it, to we can help each other.
Yeah. So that's what's worked for me. And I don't really have to do that anymore now that I've met like some huge people in the industry, but it definitely helped in the beginning. And I could get in, at that time, I could get in contact with any celebrity I wanted to in less than 24 hours. I could be talking to them.
That's so powerful. How did you come up with that tactic? Was it something that you read somewhere? Was it kind of trial and error?
Yeah, it was trial and error. I was just sitting down and I was like, wow, you know, I found this thing and it's just from laying in my bed on Instagram. You know, something that your parents say, you know, you spend too much time on your phone or whatever. It worked, you know? I learned this.
That's what's crazy nowadays is that you have people like yourself. You're 17, right?
17, yeah.
Yeah, it's 17 years old, still in high school, and making money off of something that you are selling on Instagram. You can provide a product or a service or both through social media, which didn't even exist 10 or 15 years ago. And
yeah, I think that's what's crazy to all of the like adults and stuff like that. And the parents, they're like, how can he be, you know, making money and selling shoes at, you know, 17 years old? We never had this platform, you know, this social media platform.
Yeah, well, it kind of dismantles the typical corporate structure where you enter into a company at the lower level and then you work for a year, get a promotion, work for another year, get a promotion. Like someone is basically telling you, okay, you're ready to accept more responsibility now. And so I'm going to pay you more and give you more responsibility. But in something like what you're doing, you are essentially in control of how much or how little you make in your own business based off of your connections, your work ethic, the effectiveness of how you're selling. So from the point of view of someone from an older generation, they're probably like, how the fuck is this kid doing this? Like, just because they have no idea what it's like to be that young and have the world at their disposal, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Before you started selling sneakers, how did sneakers become an area of interest? Because you could have sold a bunch of things to celebrities. What made sneakers stand out to you?
Yeah, I watched a lot of like Complex and like TV shows. And like, I spent a lot of time on social media. So you're kind of like drained or like really pushed into this pool of celebrities. And they're all wearing these like crazy shoes. And I wasn't really sure what they were. And I didn't really go too deep into it. But I was at school one day and my math tutor, he was a senior at the time and I was a freshman, and he was on Facebook during our math tutoring session when he should have been helping me with math, but he was on Facebook and he was in one of these sneaker like group chat things. And I had seen those sneakers before on these celebrities, but I wasn't really sure what the whole craze was about. And he said, well, I wait in line every Saturday outside a Foot Locker for a pair of like rare shoes, because they used to release almost every Saturday, or a different kind of rare shoe would release every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so he'd wait in line at 4 or 5 in the morning for a rare pair of shoes, and he'd resell it for double the price. At the time, it was double the price. These were not the super rare shoes. These were just flip it, get easy money, you know, get up a little bit early and make easy money. But he was not flipping it. He was wearing these shoes because he wanted to like flex on all of his classmates and all of his, you know, the whole rest of the school. But what I saw in that whole story was I didn't want to flex on everybody. I wanted to make money. So I was like, I could flip this for double. I saw the money aspect in it, not the...
That's the better version of flexing, because then you could do whatever you want, not just sneakers if you have the money.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, okay, he's like, you want to wait in line with me for the next pair of shoes? And the next pair of shoes was the Space Jam 11s. They're a pair of Jordans. They're like purple. And that was my first pair of shoes that I got. I got 11 pairs of those. I would go from that morning, that Saturday morning, I went to a Foot Locker. I got a pair. Then I went to like a Foot Action. I went to like every shoe store who was selling it. And I was like, and I was just flipping these for double. And I reinvested that and waited in the next Saturday and reinvested that. And then eventually down the line, I was like, I can hire people at $10 an hour to wait in line all across the country. And that's where I took off.
That's insane. And to go back to the whole, you guys were supposed to be doing math thing, and then you were looking up sneakers or got sidetracked. I feel like a lot of the people that I've talked to in all different areas, music, entrepreneurship, other creative lanes, a lot of what they did spurred from a moment of boredom where they were supposed to be doing something else. And then they were kind of just like looking for something to do, and something else caught their attention, and then they just kept rolling with that. And that was kind of like what podcasting, how it entered my life originally. And then I saw that pattern in so many other people where their parents told them to focus on this, or maybe they felt pressure to focus on something else. And then just by kind of just sitting there and procrastinating, they found something more valuable to take up their time.
Yeah, I think that's how it went for me too. I should have been doing math, should have been doing school, you know, working on the weekends. But I decided that it was going to be really beneficial for me to focus on shoes. And I knew I was going to school to learn how to be a businessman. I was going to school to learn how to do the things that I'm doing right now.
So how old were you when you first started waiting in line? You said that was eighth grade?
Freshman.
Ninth grade, so freshman in high school.
Freshman, yeah. I think 14 or 15.
What did the first 3 to 6 months of starting a business look like for you? Because that period of time sees a lot of failures for entrepreneurs. Like most people, I think within 6 months or a year, they just say like, fuck it, it's not worth my time, and give up. What did that early period look like for you?
I mean, it was hard. It was a lot of time spent on my side of it. It was researching trends, researching, because I didn't want to put my money into the wrong shoe, because it's kind of a gamble. You wait in line for a pair of shoes, and until the shoe actually releases and everybody has the shoe, we don't know what the resale price is going to be. So it was researching trends, researching, you know, the last pair of shoes that came out on this day last year. How much did that go for? The shoe that it was a lot of researching during the week, and then a lot of planning, you know, the day before Friday nights, making sure everybody could wait in line. Everybody was still going to wait in line, and then finding about what time would be the perfect time to wait in line to still be able to acquire a pair of shoes. Because if you were too late, I mean, it's a limited pair of shoes. So it was a lot of work spent on my time and a lot of time taken away from school. And so freshman year, I had a lot of failure in school. I think the failure came out in school.
Yeah, I mean, it's a balance. I didn't have the experience of running a company in high school or even college. I didn't really start doing what I'm doing now with Augzoro until I was in grad school. I'm 25 years old now, but there's so many pressures in high school, especially like you're around friends. If you're playing sports, I was hyper focused on baseball because I knew that's how I was going to go to college, and, you know, girls and shit like that, like all these social pressures, going through a lot of changes physically and emotionally. So if you're putting all of your energy into building a business like you were, I can definitely see how that can wear on you in terms of balancing your academics, your social life, your business life.
Yeah, it's definitely a whole change, you know, coming from eighth grade. I never really experienced what it's like to be like a normal high school, you know, one with everybody else.
Do you wish that you had more time looking back on it? Because you're senior now. Do you wish that you could
right
change?
Now, I wish I could be a freshman, you know, and just experience the whole experience all over again, but have it where not everybody's looking at you, not everybody's trying to play around with you, take sly pictures of you, you know? What? The harassment part of it, I think, has been crazy.
Do kids harass you a lot because of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of like jealousy, but I used to like, it really got to me. But I had to understand, like, this is kind of what I chose. When I decided to post it all on Instagram and started to work with celebrities, I'm going to get lashback from it. And I'm not only going to get lashback the minute I get off the plane in LA, I'm going to get lashback when I'm at school. I'm sitting in a class and these kids just won't shut up. And you just kind of talked about. I think I'm definitely like the meme of my school, you know, like, but I made something of myself and all these other kids aren't making things of themselves.
What type of stuff do they say that kind of gets on your nerves?
His shoes are fake. That used to really get to me. I was like, have no idea the stuff I go through to get these shoes. I mean, I flew to China freshman year.
You flew to China freshman year? Were you with someone else or was it by yourself?
I went with my dad. I made a connection through social media. I got in contact with the head of Adidas because at the time Yeezys were really popping, made by Kanye West.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to make sure every single one of the pairs of shoes that I get is legit. I made my whole goal that month to get in contact with the head of the Adidas factory in China. I flew to China and I learned every piece of their shoe so I would be a professional legit checker. So that comment that people would say would really get to me. It'd be like if my shoes were photographed or something and someone would comment fake. I mean, like I took every comment to heart at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there are studies that show that no matter how many positive comments you read, just one negative comment can fuck your whole day up, which is why social media can be so dangerous. You could read 1,000 YouTube or Instagram comments that are, you know, they're all in a positive light, or they're saying like, oh, this kid is cool. I love this business. Those sneakers are dope. And then you read one that says, you know, these are fake, and it kind of just like fucks your whole day up.
I don't even know why these people want to say it, but it's just, you know.
I think it has to be to get attention. I think there's some people that just sit on social media all day looking for excuses to comment something negative, and there's nothing better going on. Like that's the highlight of their day. If they get Connor to respond to them on Instagram, they'll screenshot it and show it to all their friends and shit and be like, yo, I got this dude to respond. So I think a lot of times they're trying to get attention.
Yeah. I think that's how it is at school too. Cause I got in a lot of like drama when kids would like call me out and stuff like that. And they just wanted a reaction, you know? And then I'd see like pictures on like fan pages and stuff like that of me walking around on my campus. Like that shouldn't have been okay, you know? Like why are you taking pictures of me in a place where I'm just trying to be a normal kid and do everything that you guys are trying to do?
Have you ever gotten the chance to meet a photographer named Sam Damashek out in LA? Are you familiar with him at all?
No, I haven't. I don't think so.
He has a huge following now as a photographer. He's worked with Shawn Mendes, Halsey, a bunch of big music artists and influencers and models. But he started in high school, kind of a similar situation as you, but in photography, in the sense that he had a bunch of kids making fun of him. And he was talking about some of this on the podcast where he would go leave for trips to go, you know, he was based out of LA. So he would drive up to like Santa Monica or like the beaches around LA to do photo shoots. And he'd come back and people would give him shit for leaving or say like, you know, you think you're better than us. Even his photography teacher, I think, made fun of him, like made fun of his work and said that he didn't know how to do photography, even though he makes a living off of it now and actually failed photography class in high school because his teacher failed him, like legit gave him an F because I think there was some animosity there or jealousy. But yeah, what he talks about kind of reminded me of what you were going through, in the sense that when you have students and adults that are around a super successful kid or super successful teenager, there's a lot of jealousy and resentment that comes out. Cause I think it brings up feelings of, I wish I did that when I was that young, or I wish, you know, I was killing it right now as a 9th or 10th grader when I have all these problems and shit. So like for people that are not equipped to deal with that socially, when you see something happening to another person like that, when they see that happening to you, I think their go-to is jealousy or hate or negative comments like that.
Yeah.
So what is it like growing up in Hawaii? Tell me about that.
Beaches everywhere. Most 10 minutes away from a beach anywhere on the island. I didn't really spend a lot of time at the beach. I wish I did. That's why I want to go back to freshman year. I wish right now I could go to freshman year. I could just be a freshman and just live it out again. But there's malls here. We don't all live in grass huts. It's a fun experience. I spent a lot of time in LA. I love LA. I'm going to move out there next year.
Moving out to LA next year?
Yes.
That's dope. A lot of people in America, especially around New York, they go on vacation to Hawaii, or most people don't really have a view, like a normal view of Hawaii. It's all like from a vacation resort standpoint, which is understandable. That's how people spend most of their time down there. But it seems like there's a whole nother side to the everyday life that people don't really get in touch with. So going back to the research a little bit, what are some of the markers or characteristics about a sneaker that you look for when you're buying it? Because you said a lot of times you might be picking between multiple pairs of shoes when you're doing research during the week. What are some of those characteristics that you look for when you say, okay, like this is a shoe that's going to do well in the aftermarket?
It's all about the hype. I feel like it has nothing to do about the colorways of the shoes. It has nothing to do about the style. It's about the hype. What celebrities are backing it? What's trending? If there's like countdowns online, people are going nuts about the shoe. There's tons of tweets. I mean, I'm checking every platform.
What platforms do you look at the most? I assume Instagram is up there.
Yeah, Twitter's pretty big too.
Yeah.
Because you can see the amount of tweets going on. Yeezys were really, really big. They wouldn't exactly flip for tons of money, but you could flip tons of them and, you know, tons of shoes, tons of money. So Yeezys were about getting the most amount of them that you could get, not really just getting one pair. There'd be shoes where you just want one pair, which, for example, is this shoe called the Chanel Human Races. And they went for, the retail price was, I think, somewhere around $1,200. But the day it got released,
I'm looking at one on Poshmark for $3,000. That's crazy.
But the day it got released, $50,000.
That was the selling price, or that was the aftermarket?
That was the aftermarket price, because they only released, I think, less than 200 pairs.
Damn. Where were they selling it out of? Was it one store? Was it a bunch of different stores that just had a couple pairs?
Yes, one store. And you had to go into a raffle, and it was Colette. It was the store called Colette, and it was in Paris. And you'd enter the raffle, and that's the only way you could get it. There's no lines. There's no nothing. You enter the raffle for this $1,200 pair of shoes.
That's crazy. That's something where you just book a last second flight to Paris.
No, yeah. I was talking to my dad, and I was like, so we're both going to enter this raffle. And then if I get into it, then we're going to Paris. And he's like, yeah, because you can just pay off that Paris ticket just with, you know, the resale value on the shoes.
Exactly.
And Human Race is Pharrell Williams. So that Chanel and Pharrell Williams doing a collaboration, two huge brands, that's big stuff. I mean, yeah. Supreme and Louis Vuitton did a collaboration. I don't know if you heard about that one, but it was...
I have a little bit.
Yeah, Supreme is a huge like New York skateboard brand. You probably know about it. And then Louis Vuitton collaborated.
I pass the Supreme store all the time in the city.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not like it's in an area where there isn't that much going on. There are other really nice stores around Supreme, but Supreme always has a line around the block.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I mean, their stuff is limited. I mean, I went into the Supreme market for a little bit. Sneakers were really big for me, but I also saw an opportunity to make money in the Supreme and streetwear world. It just didn't do as well as shoes. Supreme was small money. I mean, make $20 off of one thing, but these guys in New York, I mean, that's all they wanted, you know, is $20 here and there.
It seems like it's kind of like the nightclub mentality, where if you're a popular nightclub, you want your line to be as long as possible to create the hype. So like a lot of clubs will create this artificial line where they'll cap people and they'll say, you know, you can only, if you're not buying a table, you can't come in here. If you don't have five girls with you, you can't come in. It kind of reminds me of that whenever I see Supreme, because it's always a line around the block. But then when you look in the store, there aren't like a huge amount of people in the store. It's not actually that big, but they just create like that artificial demand because people see the line and then they go, what the fuck is that? And then they want to come into Supreme.
Yeah, it's all about the hype and what you're showing out to everyone else. And so they're really strict on security over there. And that just builds the hype too. them being strict on security, them not letting people wait in line, them kicking people out of line, getting police involved, that's all hype. I mean, I'm sure they've called the police on themselves, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. I wouldn't be surprised. It helps if you see any sort of hype or something happening around your store is going to get other people's attention. It doesn't matter if it's positive or negative. Like, as long as it's going to draw people and make other shoppers, potential shoppers, look at what you're doing.
Exactly.
So what's the biggest sale that you've ever made? Just one sale in terms of dollars.
And even if I had that number right in front of me, I don't think I'd put it out there.
You wouldn't put it out there? I understand.
On the internet. But I'll tell you that there's big money in shoes. There's a lot of attention in shoes. There's a lot of money in shoes. And since I've decided to put myself in the media and, you know, accept interviews and do TV interviews and articles, I've made a agreement with my management team that all of the money talk of it, I'm 17 years old, so I have to protect myself, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely get that. In terms of the actual structure of the sales, is your goal to make a few big sales during the year? Is it to have constant small to medium sized sales going on? Is it a combination? What is the pattern of revenue look like, if you feel comfortable talking about that?
No, the goal obviously is to make big sales all year long. We make pretty big sales every week.
Can you walk me through the recent sale that you posted with DaBaby and how did that go? Because I watched that Instagram video. That was
I had a really good videographer for that. I mean, it definitely, DaBaby's cool. So my management team got involved with DaBaby and he was having a show out here in Hawaii. And so I attended the show. We had all access. Yeah, I know. Now I'm spoiled with all access. I mean, I don't think I could go to a show without all access. You know, once you experience it, you can never go back. I mean, that stuff is crazy. I watched a show and then he pulled, the transaction was before the show. He pulled up. I went up to his car. I was introduced to him. I met his whole team. And then we started filming. And the video is much longer. It's just we have to cut it down to an Instagram size video where we're going to keep people locked in on the video. We don't want people to keep scrolling, you know? We want it short enough to where they'll watch it. We don't want a 20-minute video. They'll never watch the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, people's attention spans are short.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the video is 32 or 34 seconds. And I mean, it's pretty much how it was. He did a little thing for the video. He's like, this is my guy, Connor. He's the plug for shoes. And we handed over the shoes to him. He paid us. The payment of the shoes don't happen on camera. They all happen behind the scenes.
Yeah, for a good reason. You gotta protect, like you were saying, the financial side of it.
Yeah, but rappers pay big money for shoes. I mean, that's where the part comes in of I'm the personal concierge, you know? I'm not that normal reseller. And these rappers, if I'm going to hand deliver to them, I'm going to come to their shows and I'm going to like be there with them and, you know, meet them right at their car. There's an extra premium for that. And that's why I'm known as personal concierge.
That's a powerful way to market yourself, because the skill of what you're doing, or I won't say skill. I don't think that's the right word, but there are many people that can enter the market of selling shoes and reselling sneakers, but it takes a certain set of characteristics and abilities to get into the lives of celebrities like DaBaby. And I know you've also have sold sneakers to many other people that are prominent influencers, music artists. And to take it beyond just the product and be providing a service, because they're not just paying for the shoes. They're paying for, like what you said, to have it delivered to their car, to have it feel like a first class experience. Like when someone pays for first class, everyone on the plane is going to the same destination. You know, there are other people that are wearing the same shoes or similar shoes out there, but not everyone had the same experience where they're like, you know, I bought these sneakers from Connor and he came and met me backstage at a show. He, you know, genuinely cared about what I was doing, asked me what was going on, cared about like the whole experience. Like they're paying for the experience of buying a sneaker. And I think that's pretty powerful that you're thinking about that at such a young age.
Yeah, I think the first class, I never thought of it as the first class experience thing, but I mean, that's pretty much how it is. I used to have a dedicated phone line to where you could text it and get like you could just tell it what kind of colors that you liked in a shoe and stuff like that. And we'd come up with a whole lookbook of shoes in that, in the styles that you like and in the colors that you like. So then you can choose from it. We tested that out for a little bit and it didn't seem to be profitable just because I'd get like all my fans doing it, but they'd get the lookbook, but they wouldn't purchase, you know?
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so that's when we really moved into celebrity.
That seems like it could be maybe a good tool. What if it was more of a, like a private newsletter where you were only sending some sort of lookbook or newsletter out to your high profile clients, or they gave you their tastes or colors or something like that. And then you, whenever you found a match, you'd kind of just like send it out, like blast it out to like 100 people that are all high profile, and that way they could get back to
you. Yeah, that's kind of what we do now. Just not in the, not to the normal clients, you know.
I saw that you said in a previous interview that you were considering a reality TV show for making sneakers or some sort of like reality series. Is that something that you'd still be interested in?
I definitely have been open to the idea. We've had a lot of communication with a lot of different reality TV shows to just get featured on it. And then I've also had a lot of communication with, you know, having my own show. I've had a lot of networks reach out and want to do something on it. But the problem is the only thing holding me back is my future. And is sneakers the thing that I want to do for the rest of my life? And the answer to that is probably no. It's not the only thing. It's definitely going to be an aspect, but I want to have different companies and different businesses and just have all these different side things going on. I don't want sneakers to be the one thing that I rely on for the rest of my life. And I definitely enjoy it. And it's opened up so many connections for me, connections that I'll be able to use in future business ventures. But for something that I want to do for the rest of my life, I don't know if getting a show is going to be the right move, you know, for a family later, for my future later. I don't want to be always in the media.
That's very ahead of your age in terms of wisdom that you're thinking about that already, because a lot of kids would jump at that opportunity, the first opportunity. And yeah, I mean, if you have a reality TV show, people may think of you as just the sneaker guy or the, you know, and kind of peg you down to one aspect. But then if you, like you were saying, kind of build up your own brand, that's not essentially, not necessarily, excuse me, tied to sneakers, but kind of whatever you're selling, it's under the Connor Tumbaga brand or whatever you want to be known as going forward. And then sneakers are just one part of that portfolio.
Yeah. Do you know who Scott Disick is?
Scott Disick. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't he somehow related to the Kardashians?
Yeah. He was dating. I don't think they ever got married.
Okay.
But to
Kourtney Kardashian. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was just known as, you know, this snobby guy on TV, you know, on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Whenever Kourtney was on, he'd be on because they're together. And he also had this major real estate brand, but everybody had known him as Kourtney's husband and they never even knew he worked. So he was just known as that. And so that's what I want to make sure, you know, doesn't happen to me. I want to be known for my other things that I want to do. And so I don't think that this show is going to help me. But at the time when I was doing those interviews and I was saying that, that was definitely somewhere I wanted to go.
I think you're going in the right direction, especially with video, because you can essentially create your own reality TV show on YouTube and make it whatever you want. And I think people engage with that a lot, especially like the videos that you made with DaBaby. And I saw you had a couple other videos up there in the YouTube channel with other prominent YouTubers. I think people like the peek into that world and like, what does a deal actually look like? And obviously you have the stuff that you have to keep private, but I think people appreciate the openness and honesty in terms of like, this is, you know, the conversations that go on. This is where I am, different types of environments. Cause you get to go to a lot of cool places and have things like all access passes and you're meeting a lot of cool people. And so you can take advantage of that through YouTube and Instagram and Twitter on your own without having another network come in and saying like, this is how we want to portray you. You can kind of take over that yourself.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I want to like say is that, you know, a lot of people come up to me and they say, you're so lucky, you know, you're so lucky to be able to experience this and meet all these rappers. But I wouldn't really say it's luck. I worked really hard to get to meet all these people. And I feel like getting all access in the life that I'm living right now is the fruit, you know, after I did all of this hard work freshman, sophomore year.
Yeah, I mean, 2 Chainz said it best. It takes 10 years to become an overnight success. And I think a lot of people that say things like, oh, you're just lucky, or you're so lucky to be doing what you're doing, that takes the pressure off of them. Because say you did just get lucky. Say we lived in a world where you could just wake up one day and then without putting in enormous amounts of work, you could just start selling sneakers to celebrities. Then that just takes the pressure off of normal people that are working the 9-to-5 jobs to make something of themselves more. Because then if it's all luck, then they can't control that. You know what I'm saying? Like it feels good to say that guy is just lucky, because then that means I can't do that, or I can't make something of myself. I'm fine to just sit here until I get lucky or something happens to me. It's like a very externalized approach, because you're waiting for other things to happen to you. And then you have people like yourself that are creating the job that you want to have, that are making the path that you want to have.
Exactly. Yeah, I like the way you said that.
Yeah, I mean, it's freeing in a way. You know, I'm kind of working 2 jobs right now. I work in marketing for a company during the week. And I'm lucky where my schedule is kind of flexible, where I can do the podcasting and blogging and talk to artists when I want. But I'm working towards sustaining myself financially purely off Auxoro. And the time that I'm putting in is like, it seems like an investment, which I'm sure is what it's like to you. And it's freeing, kind of like when you give yourself that motivation and that drive to say, you know, I have this thing that I could control, and it's up to me to decide where that goes. And it's dependent on how I work and who I'm working with. And so I like that aspect of it, where like, you don't really know where it's going to go, but you do know that it's on you and the people that you surround yourself with.
Yeah. I think it's all about networking too, which is a really important aspect.
What does your networking look like nowadays that you've gotten past the beginning stages? When you're trying to connect to people, is it, you know, you just send an Instagram DM now that you have a much bigger following? Do you have your manager reach out? What does that typically look like?
My manager is very connected to everybody. So I don't know. I think I told you. Actually, no, I probably didn't tell you. I was talking to a lot of people about this New York trip because it was going to be really important for me. Mm-hmm. I was going to go to Rolling Loud. We're going to have all access over there. Mm-hmm. Meet a lot of celebrities. We actually had planned with Travis Scott. A lot of different huge, huge people. It was going to be massive. And then Rolling Loud ends. And next day I go to Post Malone. And I have all access at Madison Square Garden. And I meet Post Malone, Sway Lee opens for him. I had this big thing planned and it all messes up. You know, I have school back home over here and it's my senior year and I need to graduate from school. And so in order to you know, it's got to be balanced. And it was the end of the quarter and, you know, we have tests and everything like that. And so balance had to be, I had to make the right decision on that. And for me, that at the time, that the decision was school.
It's tough. I don't know what it's like to have to make a sort of decision like that along with school, because I don't have that type of pressure on me anymore. But I'm sure that you have. It sounds like you made the right decision, and that's not going to be the last opportunity that you have with those guys at all. Especially, you know, from what it sounds like with all the connections you've been able to make and the way that you run your business, I'm sure that other opportunities like that and more will present themselves later down the line. Could be a blessing in disguise.
I think these opportunities are always going to be available. I mean, I'm invited to shows every single week. I can't go to a show every single week, but when I move to LA, I'm going to be able to go to the show every week. But I mean, I used to be going to LA every 2 weeks and meeting celebrities and doing that stuff, but it took a toll on school. Freshman year, okay, this is going to be big. It's now going to be in the media. Freshman year, I think I had a 1.97 GPA.
I mean, I have been close to that in certain classes, but I've never had that.
No, and overall, yeah, this is an overall. I was failing. I was like, F school. But you know what? I learned so much because now I'm a senior that it's all about the relationships that you're making. I don't think it's really about the classes, but it's about the environment and the people you're around. The school I go to has a large network. It's got kids who I'm later on going to be able to work with. The kids that I surround myself around, are their parents are successful. They're putting them in the right environment. And those are the kids that I'm going to want to work with later. So it wasn't really for me about the classes. Although some classes and some relationships that I made with teachers are really valuable to me, but it was mostly for me about the relationships that I made on my breaks, you know?
I'm sure. I mean, it's hard to focus on school because A, you're not making money from school, and B, you have a lot of other exciting things going on in your life that other teenagers don't, and you're seeing returns from it, building relationships, running a business, getting to meet all of these high profile people that. It's like, I understand why school would take a back seat in that situation.
Exactly.
Are you worried about how you're going to handle yourself out in LA? Are you moving there with anyone? Are you getting to stand by yourself? How are you kind of preparing to make that leap?
I'm not sure what school is going to take me. I'm in talks with schools and stuff like that just because of the media presence that I bring, but I'm not ready to be certain about a school. I think
so you're definitely going to college
for the networking aspect of it and the business school. I want to be in LA. I know that I'm looking at a few schools, but I have ones in mind that I really want to that are prominent and I know have a good network. You can probably, you know, guess a few in LA, but I don't really want to come out and say what schools just for because, you know, I have my top choices and stuff like that. And I'm sure the school is probably listening to this podcast at some point when they go.
Maybe there's someone on the board that's going to check this out. But I mean, I think that things like this podcast and people that are paying to your business are advantageous because if you are looking to enroll in a business program in that school, you've already proven that you can start, run, and maintain and grow a successful business from starting from, you know, sitting on your bed, scrolling around on Instagram, getting an idea, and then years later, making a lot of money off of that, making connections. So what that school is hoping to incentivize into their own students after graduation, you've already shown that you can do that. And so when you get interviews with these schools, when you meet people from these schools at networking events, that's something that you should push into the spotlight and say, like, you know, I've already done what you're looking for. Like I may not have the grades and maybe some other fancy markers that you're looking for in terms of academics, but like I've done the work to create this business. And at the end of the day,
that's why you go to school.
That at the end of the day, that matters. As someone who's admitting people to school, if I was on the admissions office, obviously, yeah, you have to look at grades, but you also need to consider what that person's done outside of the classroom. And I think that...
Yeah, what took away from the grades.
Yeah, you know? Like you've proven you can do it.
I mean, I obviously need an explanation for why I have a 1.97 in my beginning of my freshman year. It's definitely gone up, but that's definitely I have to explain, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you should look at it as a strength. Even though, you know, most people would look at a 1.97 and say like, you know, this kid's a fuck up. They don't know the entire story and you've been able to get your grades up since then. So you've grown your business, you've gotten your grades up. You're in a position that takes other people, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. Some people never get to the point that you're at. And so I would go into those interviews and those admissions meetings feeling good about yourself and kind of pushing the business aspects into the spotlight because that separates you from everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I want to do. I want to kind of take away from the school part of it and focus on what I've done otherwise.
Are there, I'm sure you've had so many cool moments during sales, but if you had to pick a highlight reel of, you know, one or two of the coolest conversations or people or moments that have happened since you've started selling sneakers, are there any that stick out that you tell people?
So I can't exactly say what celebrity it is. Super high profile guy. I looked at him on a very high pedestal. You know, I'd be always watching him when I was little, stuff like that, as he came up. But I had the opportunity to work with him through my Instagram networking thing. And he needs a pair of shoes for a show happening that night. And we're about 4 hours away from the show. And I'm in Hawaii and he's in LA. And he thought it was going to be okay to call me. It's 4 hours before the show and say, I need this particular shoe, which is actually a very rare shoe. And I need this for my show. I'm going to perform in these shoes. Can you get these for me? And I was like, well, I could ruin my relationship with him because if I'm not able to get these shoes for him, then he's not going to think I'm the plug. You know, he's going to go to a different person. He's going to find another way. And I was like, I have to do this. And I was like, there's no carrier. An airplane can't even get from Honolulu to LA in 4 hours. You know, I had to think. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I need to get him these shoes. So I Google courier service in LA. So I find a company who just does for their company. They deliver stuff. It's like Uber Eats, but for anything.
Like Postmates, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. We don't have Postmates in Hawaii, which is so unfortunate. Yeah. But so I get this courier service to go to a sneaker store that I made a relationship with in LA because I've just gone there so much and they all know me as, you know, the sneaker. I'm known as like the sneaker biz kid, but that's how like the media portrays me. But so they all know me over there. So I buy the shoe from the store at the full resale price. And then I get the courier service to go pick up the shoe from there and deliver it to the show. And I got it to the guy in 2 hours and he needed it in four. And that was, I think, probably the craziest, most, you know, out there.
Dude, that's
thing that I had to do. And that courier service guy, he got all access to the show. I mean, so I guess he was happy.
That's insane, dude. That's your college essay right there.
Yeah, he's the sneaker plug for the, he was the sneaker plug for that day.
Yeah, dude, that's fucking sick. I mean, finding a way to get it done is the most important aspect of the job. Doesn't matter, you know, how you talk about yourself or, you know, at the end of the day, people want people like get it done. And in that moment, you got it done. And I'm sure that guy was very impressed, whoever it was. And was just like, fuck, like this kid delivered from Hawaii. He ordered a courier service to bring me the sneakers 2 hours before I even needed them. And he got the job done. And so in his mind, he's probably like, fuck, like that's pretty impressive. And it builds another notch deeper into the relationship.
Yeah. I mean, it's really...
I want to respect your time as well because we're coming up on an hour here. Is there anything that you have coming up, like a website or merch or any announcements that you want to get out there on the podcast?
we're going to release some plug merchandise because I'm the sneaker plug. And it's going to be called the Sneaker Biz Kid. And we're actually going to release the website. We already have our links and everything up. And there's a landing page right now. I haven't released it anywhere on social media. Nobody knows about it yet. But we're going to donate a portion of the proceeds to an organization that'll be later announced. But it deals with learning differences and we're for schools and stuff like that. So we're going to be donating a portion of the proceeds to this organization because I have dyscalculia and ADD. And so
what's dyscalculia?
It's trouble understanding math concepts.
Gotcha.
But I just want to be able to inspire other kids. I mean, the whole reason I started this on social media is to inspire other kids because I think there's a lot of like, I can't do this, you know? And especially with me having some sort of media following and then also these two like learning differences or disabilities, showing kids that there's like hope and you can always, you can do anything you want to do if you put your mind to it and you work hard for it.
That's great, man. That's exciting that you're helping using what you can do to help other people out. Not everyone always thinks in those terms. So I'm excited for that to happen. Do you have an expected drop date for the website and the merch, or is that still to be determined?
Still to be determined. We were supposed to release it for New York, but you see how that turned out. So, I mean, it's going to come out soon. We'll do a big launch for it, probably with a news station, some sort of media. We'll have the exact launch posted through some sort of media.
Yeah, keep me posted on the drop. We can link it to back looking into the podcast, put it out on socials.
Yeah, we already have the sites. I know it's sneakerbizkid.shop.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'll link everything to the podcast, the website, socials, any other relevant links you want.
Great. Thank you.
Of course. One last question I had for you as we wrap up. This could be, you could draw upon your personal experience or business experience for this. It doesn't necessarily have to be sneaker related. But what is something that you know now that you wish you knew 5 years ago?
I wish I knew that people in the media and the people that are running the social media and the people who are behind the scenes, the managers and stuff like that, they create the person. It's not the person that you always see on the media. And I think I was let down a lot, you know. I think that there were celebrities that I met that I wanted them to be this person and they weren't that person, you know?
Yeah, like the persona that their team was creating didn't match the person that you were meeting.
It was all their team. Yeah, it's all their team. It's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it's really great, you know? Like there's people that I've met that are just really great people, but their media just portrays them as someone else. Like Floyd Mayweather, you know? He's a boxer. He's known as like some cocky guy posting his money and stuff like that. But when you actually go in and you meet him, he's, you know, could not be that guy, you know? It's whatever their manager and their media team wants to put out there. And so the deadly guys, the managers, you know, they're the guys making the moves behind. And so I feel like the most powerful person is not the person behind the screen, because the person behind the screen is getting all the hate comments. It's the people behind them because they tell them what to do. So I wish I knew that. I wish that, you know, I didn't just believe everything put out in the media, because it's not all true.
Yeah. I mean, it's so enticing too. Because, you know, people are on social media all the time and you have people that are getting hundreds of thousands and millions of likes and putting out all these stories every day. So it kind of, even though it's a very small slice of someone's life, you don't always know that. You don't always recognize that in the moment. It's like, oh, this is the way this person always is, or this is the way I see this person. And it happens to me too, as well, which is why I like podcasts so much, because you can't really, it's not that I try to create a story with a podcast, but if you have someone on and you talk for an hour, like what we just did, you have to be able to formulate your views in an intelligent way and be able to answer intellectual questions and put what you're doing into words that other people will understand. And so I think that there are a lot of celebrities and high profile people out there where their managers just don't want them on a podcast because they don't want that person just, they don't want them talking for an hour and a half because they'll get themselves in trouble or they'll sound stupid or like their podcast persona won't match their personal media, their social media persona.
Exactly. So like right now, I don't have any manager around me, but I've you know, negotiated a thing where it's like, I still want to be myself. I don't want to put out someone else who's not myself. I definitely show a different person on the media than I am in real life. But it's, I mean, this is right here. This is getting deep and down with who I am as a real person. Not only like, because what the media just sees is he's the sneaker god, you know. But it's something else.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before when you go back to that first class experience where people are paying for the sneaker, but they're also paying to buy the sneaker from you for the Connor experience. So when you have someone like yourself that's running your own social media profile and then they meet you in person, then that's really refreshing to see that, hey, like, you know, what this kid is like on social media, like he's not just putting on a fake persona. Or I listened to that podcast and I met him in person and he's like really like this. And so the more, I feel like it's such an asset to run your own social media. I completely understand sometimes you may not have time depending on what level you're at, or you can hire someone else to do it. But I always respect people that run their own social media and keep it honest and, you know, aren't caught up in trying to...
I mean, I don't run all of it, but I do part of it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you have the business, obviously, of course, that takes up a huge chunk of your time. But even the fact that you run a portion of it, you know, a lot of people have no idea what people are tweeting out or what their team is tweeting out or posting on Instagram. And so the fact that you're having input means a lot to people.
I think the one thing that I'd want to like leave everybody with is that it's really important when you're starting a business, especially as like a kid and everything, or even as an adult, is that you have to know every aspect of your business. If you have a business, a bank or something like that, you got to know how to be a teller. I mean, one day if they tell you have to be let's say for like McDonald's or something like that, one day if they tell you have to be the cash register person, you got to know how to do that. You got to know how to be the fry cook. You got to know every part of your business before you can actually be it, you know? So I've waited in line, you know, I spent my whole freshman year waiting in line. I wasn't hiring people. I was doing that. I spent the time researching the trends. Now I have someone else doing that, but I know how to do every part of it. And if I had to go back and do it, I could do all of it.
That is an incredible piece of advice, not just for a 17-year-old, but for anybody who's looking to get into business. And so you're right. That is a great spot to end it off.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Again, thank you, Connor, for taking the time to hop on the podcast. This was an amazing conversation. I learned a lot. I always go into conversations basically trying to learn as much as possible and pretend that I don't know a lot about it. And I do my research. But in terms of the sneaker world, I don't really know that much about it. I consider myself having a very amateur view. So I thank you for enlightening me and the people who are listening to this on the podcast, giving them a little insight into what you do.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Connor Tumbaga. You can follow Connor at Connor Tumbaga on Instagram or by visiting the link in the description of this podcast. And thank you for taking this journey along with us, for being present for this conversation. If you love this podcast, you can share it with your friends. You can tag us on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Augzoro. We are a completely independent platform and we rely on you, the listeners, to help spread the word. And things like you can go leave us a 5-star rating in the iTunes store that not only boosts my ego, but it helps us become more visible in searches when people search for things like music or entrepreneur interviews, other creative interviews. We will pop up more frequently in other people's searches on the iTunes store. So go give us a 5-star rating if you haven't already, and I'll see you guys next time.